Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of this podcast. Today, Carla Sones and Christine Mackey have an awesome conversation. Christine is the Director of Economic Development for the City of Phoenix, which is absolutely booming right now. And she has some really straightforward, actionable advice for economic developers looking to land big investments on megasites in their city. And she really is speaking from experience because she just recently led on a project in Phoenix, which brought Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation to a megasite in Phoenix. So stay tuned for that. She also has some really great advice for women in economic development looking to further their careers and so much more. So Carla, take it away.
Welcome to an episode of the America's Jobs Team. I'm Carla Sones, and I am super excited about our guest today. We are going to dive right in with Christine. So Christine, thank you for so much for being with us today. We have a lot to cover, little time. We try to keep it to commute time. So we're going to get rolling here so that we can hear your insights. So I'm super excited. So I like to start the podcast out by just learning a little bit more about how you got into economic development and certainly what led you to the city of Phoenix, where you now serve as the community and economic development director. So take us on a little journey. Did you go to college for economic development? It seems like few do, but several do. So just how did you land in this profession?
Man, when I started, nobody went to college for economic development. I went to college for business with a major in accounting and had always planned to be an accountant. That's what my dad was, and that's what I'd always planned to be. When I left college, when I finished college and then went through kind of a couple of early stage jobs, I landed at a development firm, a company here in Arizona that built commercial projects. And I was their controller, their accountant. And I found myself enjoying more what was happening on the development side of the house than I was on the number side of the house, and always was kind of poking my nose in where all of that was happening. Left there and went to manage a high rise here in downtown Phoenix, then went to work for a commercial brokerage firm as their research director, where I could kind of combine my numbers game along with my love of development and building projects. And as we evolved there, what I always found myself wondering about was the individuals that the companies we'd recruited to Phoenix to take buildings. Did they find everything that we told them about? Did they find the community we said? Did they like the real estate? Did their kids like the schools? What was the outcome of the work that we did? And one day as a complete geek, I was watching the Chandler Channel on public broadcast here. And my job was advertised for the city of Chandler in economic development. And I knew nothing about economic development, but my husband encouraged me to apply for the job. I did, and was fortunate enough to be selected, and kind of how I got into economic development.
I love it. I love it. And we kind of call that like being bitten by the economic development bug. And I think a lot of us have a similar story of you heard about it, you were curious, you found yourself like being really interested in it, even though you should have been maybe focusing on something else on your current task list based on your current role, but you got bitten by that bug and couldn't restrain yourself from asking questions and really getting involved. I love that.
Once you get bitten, it's over.
It's over. You are so right. It's over. You are in for the long haul. So, okay. So I know you've had a lot of activity out there in Phoenix, and there's a lot of really exciting things. So I wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit about, what you've been working on. I know when we last kind of looked, and it looked like there was a semiconductor manufacturing company coming, I'm sure there's a lot of exciting work. So do you want to give us maybe like the skinny shortened version on kind of what's happening out in Phoenix and what you're looking forward to?
Sure. Absolutely. So decades-long career in economic development in Metro Phoenix. And I can look you in the eye right now and tell you that in all those decades, I've never had a book of business like we have right now. The activity here in Phoenix is off the charts in new development, in technology companies selecting Phoenix, in cyber, in software, in biosciences and healthcare. But of course, the largest, you know, largest investment in the history of the state of Arizona is TSMC. It is a semiconductor company out of Taiwan, and they are have recently started construction on an 1,100-acre campus up in North Phoenix in an area known as Biscuit Flats. And, you know, I joke with people that I spent 2019, a good portion of it in Taiwan, marketing at a place called Biscuit Flats. It's bordered by Dead Man's Wash. So, you know, not really the area that you tend to think of yourself marketing as an economic developer in a major metropolitan area, but we were successful. And, you know, it really took an entire state to bring that company to Phoenix with the Commerce Authority and GPAC and our utilities, and most importantly, led by the mayor. So the mayor was with me on the initial trips to Taiwan to meet with their executives, and her experience in utilities and her background in water really led us to the place where TSMC selected Phoenix. So I really do give the credit to the mayor in being such a good sport on, you know, nonstop turnaround flights to Taiwan on a number of occasions. But, you know, on the other side, you look at biosciences and healthcare. So we were all pretty late to the party with our first activity really in early 2000s in biosciences. And yet this year, we were named as one of the top five emerging biosciences markets in the country. We've got about $3.5 billion in capital investment under construction right now, representing 4.4 million square feet and 7,000 new jobs. So it's the largest in the entire country under construction right now in healthcare biosciences.
Well, congratulations. It's really exciting to hear you talk. And I know there's been a lot of economic developers talking about marketing mega sites, and you were certainly, with the help of your mayor, really successful in doing that. Do you have any advice for other economic developers that have a marketable large site and they're looking for a user? What like kind of lessons learned do you have that might be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been successful in marketing a number of mega sites over the last, you know, 25 years. And if I could share two things, number one is its infrastructure. So you can have a mega site. It could be the best site that you could think of, you know, perfect for the company. If the infrastructure is not there, you're off the list, or at least a plan to get the infrastructure there and not on the company's nickel. It has to be an investment where the city or the region that you're working in has a plan and has the ability to make investments to get the infrastructure to the site. Especially on our mega sites, we're competing on a global basis. And you've got other areas that are always going to be going up against you, trying to make their site just a little bit sweeter and just a little bit better. And infrastructure is something that everyone's going to bring to the table to make those sites marketable. The second thing I would say is typically our mega sites maybe don't have all the amenities around them, maybe don't have all the appurtenances that you might have in another area. So bringing in expedited plan review, putting together that crack team that can be dedicated to the megasite project and able to move it forward quickly. They need to know that they're your top priority and that you've assembled a team that is going to make them their top priority and solve any challenges that they might find.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing your advice. And Christine, you have just seen tremendous success, and you kind of went through just a couple recent examples in your tenure and in the time that you've worked in Arizona and the greater Phoenix area. And I am just astounded by how much you've been able to accomplish. And just curious, and this is kind of a personal question, but I think, you know, in economic development, there's several women that are kind of up and coming and that have built these amazing careers. What advice do you have for other women that are really aspiring to grow their career, you know, much like yours? You've had great success, very well respected. What advice do you maybe have for other women that are looking to grow a career in economic development?
So I think most important is never forget that you work with an entire team, that your success is not yours. Your success is because there's a team that surrounds you that makes you look really good. And I never forget that. I work with incredible people on a day in and day out basis that help me move the needle forward. So number one is never forget you're part of a team. This is not about you. I think the second thing is that, you know, I was taught when I was very, very young, put your head down, act like you got four smarts in your head, and try to come up with solutions that work for everybody. You know, you really, your reputation can handle one, maybe two cram downs a year. And what I mean by that is when you tell people what they have to do. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you got to get everybody on board in agreeing with what you're working on and what you're proposing is really the best way to move forward. You can't just keep running to your city manager, to your senior leadership saying, you need to make them do this. You got to convince them that what you're working on really is in the best interest of your community.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I know you probably have had mentors in your journey along the way. Can you talk about what role mentors have played as you've kind of like lived out and continue to live out your career?
Absolutely. So I have two mentors that really come to mind that have taught me so much. And the first was young in my career when I was in commercial real estate. And he was a well-respected broker and the president of the brokerage firm I worked for. And he really taught me two things. One was she who gets to the deal first gets the deal. So in other words, don't dawdle because everybody else is looking at it too. And he taught me everything I know about commercial real estate. So he used to take me, you know, in his Mercedes, stop at the 7-Eleven and buy me a Slurpee and make me walk vacant buildings and tell him why they were vacant. So I learned kind of from the ground up how real estate works and how buildings fail or don't fail. And so on that mentorship side, he's also the guy that I still call today. If I'm struggling with a building, if I'm struggling with a site, I'll call him and say, hey, I can't figure this one out. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. Tell me what we need to do. And he'll break it down for me and get me kind of centered back on the straight and narrow of where we need to with those sites. My other was an assistant city manager in my previous job in Chandler. And he was over all the, over planning, over streets, over water, and over economic development. And I was a pretty stubborn young woman early in my career. And I would do that. I would go to him and say, you need to tell them we're going to lose this project. You have got to tell them they have to do it this way. And he's the one who taught me that life really doesn't work that way. Your reputation can't handle it. You need to go and convince them that you're right. And he used to also challenge me. I'd bring in my projects and he'd challenge me and say, why would we do this? And at first I was so taken aback. I mean, I'd have a 200,000 square foot, 1,000 job project and, you know, major capital investment and major salary components to go along with it. And he'd say, why would we do this? And what he was challenging me with was I needed to convince him that this was the right thing to do, because if I could convince him, when I was in front of our elected officials, they couldn't stump me. He would challenge me to stump me before I got out in the public or before I got in front of elected officials as to why this was in the best interest of the city. So he taught me early on, and I still use it today. I really think things through before any of my projects see the light of day, any of our projects are moving forward. I run it by so many people to make sure I haven't missed something that there's going to be a gotcha when I get out in the public.
That is so smart to do. And I think I love hearing just the stories of the roles that mentors play, because I think they're so important. And I think, you know, as you grow in your career, you become a mentor to people. And so really reflecting on what's been helpful helps to kind of translate that into how we develop the future of this profession, which I think is really cool. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the pace, because you kind of referenced lots of flights to Taiwan. I know that this year of the pandemic has been, you know, just hard, like really hard for economic developers. And the pace is not slowed down. It's picking up. The project pipelines are full. How do you kind of manage the pace and take care of yourself? Like, I think it's a profession where there's always a tight turnaround. There's always kind of last minute hurdles, and it can be, I feel like a lot of people can get really burnt out after a while if they don't use just a lot of intentionality behind like taking care of yourself. So how do you do that? Like, how do you make sure that your battery is charged?
Well, you know, you mentioned the pandemic and pre-pandemic, I got to be honest with you. I thought I was working at my top level. I thought I was working as hard as I could possibly work. We do a lot of hours, a lot of days a week. We're really fortunate that Phoenix is the it girl right now. And we're seeing so many projects, but then comes the pandemic. And then we've got, you know, we have 120,000 businesses here in Phoenix, and a great portion of them grew a significant amount during the pandemic. But we had about 22,000 of our small and micro businesses that really started to struggle, where they were, you know, our airline support businesses, they were our restaurants, they were our true small businesses, and trying to help them. So as we were able to deploy a lot of resources for them. And, you know, I think what I look at is you got to laugh a lot, because in this role, if you can't find the humor, you'll cry. You will find yourself in a corner in a fetal position, rocking yourself because you're letting people down and you're letting jobs down and you're letting companies down. So we learn to laugh a lot at ourselves. And that, I would say, is predominant. The reason that we can keep charging the way we charge is you got to love what you do and you got to find the humor in which you do it. So that's kind of first. And then secondly is, you know, you do have to be able to disconnect. You do have to be able to find time for yourself. And for me, it's beating on my garden. So I grow my own fruits and vegetables. And, you know, I go home from work at night, and whether it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night, I still make time to go outside and play with my plants and walk around the backyard and just kind of be outside. We're really fortunate here in Arizona. So outside's our salvation. And, you know, when you've been in, especially in the pandemic, where I'm always out in the market, I'm always standing on sites, I'm always in buildings. And in the pandemic, I spent a great portion of the year in this box that is my office on Zoom calls like we are here today.
Yep.
And getting up and getting away from that is hugely important.
I think that is, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I think it is, I was saying to somebody the other day, just losing the commute time as we were working from home. I didn't realize how important that time was for me to kind of gear up for the day and unwind from the day. Like just that time alone in the car. It's not even a long commute, but just that time to kind of process where you're not on for a minute.
And you say that for me, I tried to telework one day because we were sent to telework back in March of 2020. My whole team, except for 5 of us, have been teleworking now for over a year. I couldn't. I did it one day, and I take my energy out of being around other people and seeing things. And I'm in a high rise in downtown Phoenix, and I've got great glass line. So there are 5 of us that just couldn't do it. Our personalities didn't allow us to telework. And I've been lucky. We had 20 cranes in the air in downtown Phoenix in 2020. And I can watch the cranes working. I can watch the construction workers. So I've been commuting. Now we're isolated. We're socially distanced. We wear masks all day if our doors aren't shut. But on, you know, 2 full floors of City Hall, there's only 5 of us. And it's been my salvation, to your point, that being able to still do my commute and still, to me, my business life, other than being in a flat environment, not around people, has been pretty normal.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it is nice to see the cranes in the air and see things moving. Like it's like we're not just stopped, you know, it's different, but it's still happening. Okay. So one last question. I can tell that you're, you know, continue to be just passionate about what you do. So what keeps you excited? Like what keeps you coming back for more? Like you land a big project, what gets you excited about getting the next one?
You know, it's always been for me. It's been about the fact that I get to be part of building a city long after we're gone, long after we've retired or we've gone away or passed on. The work that we've touched, the work that we've done is going to stand for decades. And we just get to make a difference. We are helping to make a city that's going to stand the test of time. It's going to be sustainable. People have jobs because of us. People can volunteer in their kids' schools. They can shop. They have roofs over their families' heads, partially because of the work that we do. And we build buildings, and those buildings are built. And you get to drive by them every day, and you know you had something to do with that. There's just no better feeling. I truly have the single best job on this entire planet.
I love that. And that's a great way to end the podcast. Christine, thank you so much for sharing your energy with us, your smile with us, words of insight and encouragement. I think is perfect timing for me, and I know it will be for many of our listening audience. So thank you so much for taking time to be on the podcast with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.